Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the peer-to-peer learning routine HIV testing webinar with presenters Fidel Bucandreas and Dr. James Tesorario today, Thursday, November 5th. Today's webinar is brought to you by the Partnerships for Care Project. The Partnerships for Care Project is a three-year multi-agency project funded by the Secretary's Minority AIDS Initiative Fund and the Affordable Care Act. The goals of the project are to expand provision of HIV testing, prevention, care and treatment in health centers serving communities highly impacted by HIV, build sustainable partnerships between health centers and state health departments, and improve health outcomes among people living with HIV, especially among racial and ethnic minorities. The project is supported by the HIV Training Technical Assistance and Collaborative Center, otherwise known as the HIV TAC. Today's presenters will be Dr. James Tesorario. He is the director of the AIDS Institute Division of HIV, STD, HCV, and the AIDS Institute. He oversees the Bureau of Community-Based Services, the Bureau of HIV/STD Field Services, and the Bureau of Special Populations, the Prevention Planning Unit, as well as special projects and initiatives of the division. Dr. Tesorario leads the division of the implementation of the National HIV/AIDS Strategy, as well as high-impact HIV prevention activities in general, including HIV testing and linkage to care, partner services, condom promotion and distribution, behavioral interventions for HIV-positive and high-risk individuals, LGBT health, drug user health, and various policy initiatives. Also on today's presentation, we have Fidel Bucandreas. Mr. Fidel Bucandreas, I hope I am pronouncing your name correctly. He is the designated HIV program lead for Betances Health Center and has been working in the HIV field for over 15 years. In 2003, Mr. Contreras immigrated from Honduras, where he volunteered in community-based organizations that served HIV patients. He has been a committed employee at Betances Health Center since 2005, when he began as a volunteer HIV and prevention counselor and quickly advanced to become a full-time staff member in administrative and case management roles, and in 2011 assumed managerial oversight for the center's HIV program. Mr. Bucandreas has a master's in business administration and project management certification. He is trilingual with fluency in Spanish, Portuguese, and English, and well qualified for the program lead position, as he has hands-on knowledge and experience working in the field of HIV and AIDS and is fully committed to the program and its goals. Evidence of this can be seen in the contributions made towards case management efforts resulting in outstanding health outcomes and HIV patient population growth, with 132% growth in patients. They originally had 107 patients in 2011 to now 248 patients in 2013 per UDS report. They also have a 93% viral load suppression of less than 200 rate in 2013 and a 95% CDC count greater than 200 for the same period. And I believe without further ado, our speakers will begin.
Thank you, Chelsea. My pleasure to be here today, really just to serve as a lead-in to Fidel's presentation, which I'm sure will be as interesting to everyone on the line as it was to us. So I'm going to speak just a few minutes and sort of set Fidel up. I'll talk a little bit about routine testing in New York State, and then Fidel will describe his excellent program. So I can't talk about routine testing without at least mentioning the governor's ending the epidemic. It's a requirement. Anybody in New York State knows this quite well, and I'm sure most of the nation has heard about it. In 2014, Governor Cuomo announced a three-point plan to end AIDS as an epidemic in New York State. One of the central tenets of that plan is to identify persons who remain undiagnosed and link them to care. In New York State, our estimates are that there are 22,000 HIV-positive individuals undiagnosed at any given point in time, or at least in 2014. Another central tenet, not the focus of today, is our linkage to care work, which, of course, Partnership for Care is all about as well. So in New York, as in most places, there are two primary strategies for HIV testing. targeted testing, which is risk-based, and that's primarily just accomplished through the funding of community-based organizations to reach high-risk individuals in various targeted settings. And then what we're talking about today is routine HIV testing based on, in New York State's case, public health law. So New York State public health law has been changing a bit over the last 5 years. As of 2010, it requires that healthcare providers offer testing to all persons aged 13 to 64 and anyone else who's outside this age range, you know, when risk is identified. The law applies to hospitals, diagnostic treatment centers, primary care providers, family medicine, internal medicine, general practice, OBGYN, and pediatric providers. There are exceptions to the law, but they're fairly limited. So, you know, by and large, all healthcare providers, this is the expectation that everyone is offered an HIV test. Now, if someone is determined to be HIV positive, it is the responsibility of the diagnosing provider to post-test counsel that individual and to ensure that that person is linked to medical care. So as I said, as part of the ending the epidemic, we've had a few public health law changes. In 2014, the elimination of written consent for HIV testing was what happened in every setting outside of prison settings. And then this year, prisons were also are also no longer required to obtain written consent. So in all of New York State now, there is no need for written consent for HIV testing. The other bullets here have to do with other aspects of our ending the epidemic efforts and allow for data sharing between health provider or healthcare providers and health departments around surveillance data. That's, of course, a central element to our P4C work. So just before we hear from Trudell, I wanted to talk about one sort of comprehensive assessment that we've done recently to look at where we're at with testing in New York State. We contracted with iPRO, which is, I think most people know iPRO, but it's a national organization that provides a full spectrum of assessment and improvement services. We wanted to see how well emergency rooms were actually doing with HIV testing. We have several initiatives in the state that attempt to increase the rate of routine testing in healthcare settings, and in hospitals in particular, and in EDs in particular. So it was a two-phase project. The first was just a review of policies and procedures. This was done in every one of our hospitals in New York State that have an ED, which is the vast majority of them, 192. And then what we also did was had a representative sample of 200 patient charts from a representative sample of 27 emergency departments across all of New York State. This was done in 2014, but the data sampled were 2013 records. So what we found regarding the policy findings was that only about half of the hospitals had updated policies that were in compliance or were consistent with the updated New York State public health law. So iPRO was able to work with each of the hospitals that didn't have updated policies so that by May of this year, all 192 hospitals have HIV testing policies that have been reviewed and approved by iPRO. So that's the good news. Now the not so encouraging news. So we wanted to know the extent to which HIV testing was actually happening within the emergency departments. And on the left side of this graph is the sort of depressing answer to that, although not necessarily a surprising answer. So of the 5,398 medical charts reviewed, just 3% showed any evidence of HIV testing. Of that 3%, I have it in front of me, I believe two-thirds of those tests were actually rapid tests, and there were no HIV positive test results found among those 178 people who did test. So not a whole lot of testing going on in EDs in New York State, or at least not the 27 that we randomly sampled from. On the right side of this graph, or of this page rather, are the results of the 5,220 individuals who were not tested. And the one, if you were to add these numbers up, they don't quite hit 5,220. There's 19 too many. So that last bar of 1780 should really be 1761. But all of this to say that of the charts that were reviewed where there wasn't testing, about 63% rather, you know, had documentation that either the person refused or they lacked the capacity to consent for a test, or that they had a previous HIV test on file, or that they had being treated for a life-threatening illness, or that they were outside the age range. The other 1761 it should be, which represents about 34% of all tests, had no evidence that a test was offered, and that is part of the requirement of public health law that the test offer be documented. So not great findings all in all. So what we're going to do now is we're doing a more comprehensive review of 40 hospitals, and because again, one of the important findings here is that this was before the the Ending the Epidemic Initiative. It was before the changes to the most recent changes to public health law. So this is our baseline data. What we're doing now is we're actually doing a sample of over 10,000 charts from around 40 hospitals, and hopefully we will find, you know, some impact of the Ending the Epidemic activities and of the testing law changes. So that's happening now over the next couple of months. And so somewhere time in the spring, I'd be able to come and present, you know, our findings with regard to the follow-up efforts, which hopefully will be better. We're also taking programmatic efforts to work with hospitals to educate them and, again, to do anything we can to remove barriers to testing in this environment. So in terms of follow-up information, my email is here, and that website link will take you to our Ending the Epidemic page, which has really great links to everything that we're doing in New York State around trying to end the epidemic by 2020. That's it for me. I will put myself on mute and we can hear from Fidel.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Jim, for the introduction. We can talk about routine testing without talking about ending the epidemic by 2020. We find people who are unaware of their HIV status but doing HIV routine testing. We link them to care, maintaining in care. We offer PrEP for those at high risk from getting HIV. And in this way, we could end the epidemic by 2020. Routine HIV testing or routine HIV screening is the practice of making regular HIV testing a routine part of medical care. Some of the challenges or struggles to implement HIV routine testing were the provider's complaints. Too much to do in an appointment already. What is unwanted positive? It will make us run late. And so many more that you might have heard about it. At Betance Health Center, we follow the recommendation for HIV testing of adults, adolescents, and pregnant women in healthcare settings. We are making HIV testing a part of routine medical care for people ages 13 and older. We have a little bit of a struggle in finding out what ages we tested, but at the end we decided to test people from 13 and older, regardless of the risk that they presented. With a large experience in point of care, rapid testing, it was less difficult to implement the HIV routine test center-wide. We offer the HIV test as part of a comprehensive medical care together with other tests. This made the test less stigmatized because the provider sit with the patient and offer the test together with all the tests that they're going to do or the screening that the patient need to have. General consent for medical care is considered sufficient consent for HIV testing. This is helping to reduce stigma around HIV testing. We use the fourth generation immunoassay for testing the patient. This technology is able to detect HIV by 11 to 14 days. So it detects the infection in the early stage. And this test not only looks for antibodies, but also for antigens. It detects the protein P24, which is a component of the HIV particle. Information about the fourth generation HIV test was provided to all the providers at Betance Health Center in order to implement the HIV routine test. Protocols for HIV routine tests are in place. We promote the HIV test in all points of care by advertising it center-wide. Since starting in our entrances, you will find advertisement about getting testing. We have posters and videos in the waiting areas, encourage patient to get tested. In every single examination room, we had message promoting the testing, HIV testing. We do monthly events in the center promoting HIV testing and educating people about HIV and prevention. We believe that because we keep the conversation going, it makes patients more likely to get tested, and making routine testing an integration of services and less stigmatizing. HIV test is added to general labs unless patient refuses. Patients don't feel targeted because it's offered to everyone, creating less stigma. We promote the HIV testing center-wide. Also, at the moment of contact with the nurse, medical assistant, and medical provider, we conduct motivational interviewing with the patient, encourage the patient to get tested for HIV. All types of visits present an opportunity for testing. At the time, formally identify HIV positive patients that have been receiving care for years in Betances were identified. Two of them were identified with symptoms of HIV infection. It means in the late stage of HIV. And both of them were with AIDS diagnosis by the time. Unfortunately, one day after diagnosis, died. If a client refuses, he or she is asked again at each subsequent visit. We have in our electronic health record reminders for the providers to do several screenings, and one of them is HIV testing. We have a structured data that track patients who belong in the following categories: getting tested by age, the last time they were tested, or never tested. If the patient falls within any of the above stated categories, the HIV test is offered. Patient refusal for HIV testing is captured within a structured data field, and reasons are documented. Some of the reasons are I already got tested or are not sexually active. It is important to notice the fact that when the provider offers the HIV testing as an integration screening test, the patient is more likely to accept to get tested. And even better, when the message is coming from the medical provider, it's more likely that the patient takes the test. HIV routine tested for all. That is our slogan. We test everybody. HIV screening is offered for patients in all points of care. In the nursing station, in the dental department, with the nutritionist, in any place that we can promote the test, we promote it and we do it. Persons at high risk for HIV infection are screening for HIV at least annually. These are persons that are within a discordant relationship. One of the partners is HIV infected. Some are prostitute, and some have multiple partners, or they are scored. General consent for medical care we consider enough to do the testing. For pregnant women, our general consent for medical care is enough. So we offer the test when we find a pregnant woman. HIV screening is included in the routine panel of prenatal screening tests for all pregnant women. After the patient is notified, HIV testing is performed. HIV test is performed again in the third trimester. Our strategies for success are a strong management, medical director and leadership supported the testing, So in that way, we're able to implement the HIV routine testing. Immediately linkage to HIV care program for patient testing positive. This is a key point because patients, when they tested positive, we had to do the post-testing counseling, telling them what are the benefits to getting in care. So we linkage them immediately in care. Prior experience, the other thing that we have strong is our prior experience with HIV testing as point of care or rapid testing. From September 1st, 2014 to June 30, 2015, we found 904 patients that we screening for HIV. We screened 904 patients for HIV. From 2014 to June 2015, we found 25 newly diagnoses. All of them were immediately linked to care at Betance Health Center. Unfortunately, as I mentioned before, one of them were identified too late and died. I would say that any new project has always challenge, but with determination, we can overcome this challenge and implement it with success. Now is the time of question. If you have any question, please let me know and I will answer to the best of my knowledge. So this is a webinar that has to be with interaction. We want to show you that how to implement it and what were our struggles and our challenge and our success, of course. Any questions?
Thank you very much, Fidel. Any of our participants, if you'd like to propose any questions that you might have for any of the parts that Fidel might have mentioned or maybe share some challenges your health center may be experiencing and maybe you'd like to propose a question to Fidel, you're more than welcome to do so at this time. You may either type in a question or you can raise your hand and I will unmute you and then you may pose your question. So I will offer some time at this point for you all to type in some questions or to raise your hand and we can hear your question. Okay, I think I have a question right here. Our providers complain there are already too many pop-up alerts from the EHR. Do you have any suggestions?
Well, we have the same alert in our electronic health records. And our providers, they don't complain. They find actually a good tool for them to identify what screening they have to do with the patients. So I don't believe alerts are a burden for them, but you know, providers complain because they don't have enough time. And then when we see so many alerts, yes, of course, we will be overwhelmed, but it's a way to remind that what screening they had to do. And this is a standard of care. We have to provide the best of care as possible. I believe nobody will remember everything. So by putting this alert is a great tool to help people to know what they have to do with the patient.
In the clinic setting, what are you seeing is a good method or practice of getting clients excited about testing?
We have different advertisements. Yes, it's not like the way that we do is to offer the test like any other test. For example, when they going to be screened for other illness, so we had to draw blood. So because we had to draw blood, we tell them, well, we will draw blood from you, so we will add another test, and that test is HIV. Generally, they are okay with that because instead of coming for getting only the HIV testing, they get in the test together with the other tests. And we have different messages I can say what message is better, because for some people they cut the attention with one message, but for others they don't even read the message. But when the provider offer is the point that they are more likely to get the test. It's the way that the provider offer the test, I would say. They are excited because they don't have to come back only for the HIV testing. They are excited because they're going to get tested in a panel of testing. I don't know if this answered your question or...
I would also say that, Fidel, based off your presentation, you were also saying that when patients come in, they're seeing videos with HIV testing, and then they're seeing flyers or they're seeing visuals in the waiting room or in their actual room with the doctor. So they're also seeing some more, you know, reminders or getting them thinking about HIV testing. Would that be correct?
Right, it's correct, and this keeps the conversation. We find out that the video from the New York City Department of Health are very helpful. These videos are very short videos, like 5 minutes. We present them in the waiting area. So patients that are visual, they like the videos, and then they keep like thinking about the HIV.
Someone else asks, can you remind us which EHR system you're using?
Yeah, we use Electronic Clinical Works.
Someone asked, I've heard some health centers are only counting HIV tests done on-site versus patient report of tests. What's the practice used at Batonsis?
Yeah, we report the tests that we do at Batonsis, but we also report the tests that we do as a point of care outside Batonsis.
How does harm reduction fit in with your routine testing procedures?
Harm reduction, well, because we find also a lot of patients at high risk, we promote pre-exposure prophylaxis for the patients that are at high risk. These patients that are in a discordant relationship, one of the partners is HIV, or they are scored, or they are go-go dancers, they are prostitutes, we offer PrEP. We also tell them that, well, to use a condom is an option, but we have more options that now we have exposure prophylaxis, and we offer PrEP countrywide. As a matter of fact, we have now 25 patients on PrEP. That makes our approach very successful, because we are not only identifying HIV positive patients, but we also preventing people from getting HIV.
Another person asks, do you take patients' word about previous testing, or do you always retest?
If we don't have, because some patients, they said, yes, I already have been tested. But if we don't have proof by writing, we test the patient. We say to the patient, okay, but one more test won't hurt. So it's better to get tested, because we need to have documentation in our electronic health record. Most of the patients, they accept the test.
So I'm going to unmute Edward Cayendo. He had the question about negative test results. So, Edward, I'm unmuting you now, and you may go ahead and ask your question.
Thanks very much for the presenters. My question about the negative results is, we are trying to find a way of giving this, so we are wondering if you send the results as part of all the other labs that you give the clients, or you send a letter, or you give them a call, or you just wait until they show up for their next appointment. We're just trying to figure out the best way to do that. And if you just make a call, or you just hand them over somehow, or they come back, because we're trying to write a policy on that one, so we're trying to figure out the best way to do it. Can you please help us out?
Yes. For negative results, we wait until patient come back to the next appointment. We review the lab together and give the result. If it's negative, we tell the patient that the patient is negative, and to keep negative, we do the heart reduction. If the patient is at high risk, we tell them the tool that we have, that is condoms, also PrEP. So for negative result, we don't call anybody. On the other hand, for positive result, yes, we call the patient to come in for an appointment, an early appointment, when it's positive. If it's negative, we give the result as any other test, all together.
That's okay.
The question, or you have future more clarification that is needed?
The question is, what is your policy or procedure if the patient has a positive result from a fourth generation test? Do you do referral, or do you do blood work the same day, or do you initiate treatment based on the positive fourth generation test?
When it's a fourth generation test, we immediately link the patient to our HIV specialist, who does future tests. It does the HIV-1, the differentiation for HIV-1, HIV-2, does the RNA, the viral load, the CD4. So then it's a panel of tests, but we immediately link it to care the patient. We don't wait. If the patient is positive in a fourth-generation test, we link it immediately to the HIV specialist.
Okay. So what do you do in scenarios if the patient does not want to know their status?
Sorry, can you repeat the question? Then we do the heart reduction intervention, but we try to convince the patient to get tested anyway. Generally, when they mention, I don't want to know my status, it's something inside them that made them trigger to say something about the testing, and is more likely to get tested. That's our experience. I know that some people, they definitely don't want to know their status, and we have to respect them also. But these are the minority.
Okay. Someone asked, how difficult in the beginning was it to get management and leadership to support routine HIV testing and develop policies and procedures for this program?
Well, at the beginning, first we did the training for the fourth generation testing. We showed the benefits of getting patients tested, what we have found in our testing size, patients that were unaware. Now they are aware of their status. So the leadership started the conversation, and we involve all our staff, all our leadership, starting from our medical director that had been very proactive in taking the lead, made the HIV routine testing possible. So we started the conversation with all our leadership at the Cancer Health Center, and then we implemented.
And what about the development of policies and procedures for this program? Can you speak to that?
Right. We developed, mostly I did together with our HIV specialist, the policies and procedure. At the beginning, we did our SOP. They were very short. Nothing complicated, but then we got it, the HRSA asking for the policy procedures, and they have a lot of requirements. So we have a lot of struggle in writing the policies, but at the end we did. It was a little bit confused to do it, and then because of the requirement, the HRSA asked for. But anyway, we already were doing the routine testing based in our previous policy and procedure. So now that we wrote the policy and procedure for the HIV routine testing that we sent it to HRSA, we had to think more about it, but we did it. It wasn't easy, for sure.
Can you comment on the process of partners' notification?
Yeah, when a patient tests positive, we immediately ask the patient if he want to notify to their partners or if the patient needs some help, that we can help here at Betances, or we can send anonymously to the Department of Health. And the majority, they prefer anonymously. So we communicate to the Department of Health what is going on, and they are the one that dealing with the other person. Some of them are willing to tell the partner, but these are the minority.
Someone else asked, in a shelter setting, is there any other methods that are considered acceptable in addressing testing procedures?
In a shelter setting, I believe it doesn't matter. We have people that live in shelter. We do the testing, and if they tested positive, they are very lucky because we can get them in better housing. So many patients that come in for the shelter, when they tested negative, they feel depressed, they want to get positive. That's silly, but it happened because they know that by testing positive, they can get better benefits.
Okay. Someone else commented and asked, you mentioned that clients are tested at all visits. What if it's not a nurse or medical provider? Do you have standing orders for HIV testing or refer them to a medical team member?
We have a standing order for HIV testing. We do point of care, so that are the standing orders. But the physician have to order anyway. So that's why we have already the standing orders.
Someone else asked, does your center have a PrEP program in place?
Yeah, we do have PrEP program in place. And as I mentioned early, we have already 25 patients on PrEP. So this is a great success because we are preventing people from getting HIV. And we are growing. We go to clubs, nightclubs, to promote PrEP. So in that way, we have some of them are go-go dancers also. So we keep the conversation going for PrEP. We have been very successful, and we hopefully will get more people on PrEP.
Okay, this next question, if you are not able to answer this, we will certainly follow up and get the answer to today's participants. But someone asked, based on the HRSA requirements set forth, is it ethical to offer incentives for testing?
Well, so many places, they offer incentive. We don't offer incentive. What we do is like some snacks sometimes. When we do promotions, events, we give some snack, we give some goodies. But definitely, as a routine testing, We don't give any incentives.
Okay. Yeah, Chelsea, this is Jim. I just wanted to just chime in too. I think as a state health department, we would not, you know, encourage incentives as part of routine testing because it's not sustainable, and it also really, there's no other examples where we do that in a healthcare setting. We want to treat HIV as a chronic, you know, disease, something that we would just we want to remove the exceptionalism around it to the extent possible. So I think it would, offering incentives probably works away from that.
Thank you very much. Someone else asked, did you develop PrEP policies and procedures?
Yes, we do have the PrEP policies and procedures in place because we have already the program in place. And as I mentioned earlier, we have patients already on PrEP.
Someone asked, what kind of promotional events were used?
For example, the HIV Testing Awareness Day, the Latino HIV Testing Day. That is the event that we are doing at Betances. Or we find out that any important day in the calendar, we do a large promotion for testing. And this is mostly rapid testing that we do, not as a part of routine testing, because we want to test more people in the community. Then is when when we do this kind of testing. And then we also do Zumba classes. In that way, we promote the testing. Got so many people from the community, and we are able to test these people that come in to the center. What we do is we engage them to come into the center, but promoting different events.
Someone else asked, how did you train your whole workforce to participate in routine testing?
As I mentioned earlier, we do the training to the providers. When we have our provider meeting, and we do the training for them in routine testing. And we bring people from outside that have been very, very successful to do the training for the providers, mostly. We did the HIV for generation testing training for all of our staff that is involved in testing. We have been doing two trainings right so far for 4th generation routine testing.
Someone else asked, how do you get non-medical providers more engaged? And by non-medical providers, this individual means social workers, behavioral health counselors, addiction counselors. How do you get them more engaged?
The way that we engage all our staff is by doing trainings center-wide. We do the training for all our staff, starting from the front desk, the maintenance guy, social worker, nutritionist, all the providers, they are together in the staff meeting, and we train them in different ways. We have been doing training for PrEP for all staff. We have been doing training of HIV 101 for all the staff. And in this way, we engage them in our testing setting. They are also aware of the epidemic and what are our goals in ending the epidemic. I'm also very active with all the staff, and I give talk to them and speak with them. And we keep the conversation, but doing so many different action like the brochures, the center-wide, the videos, the trainings. This keep going and going that everybody's involved in our program in some way or other.
I've already received some really positive feedback from folks. Folks are saying thank you already. Someone already mentioned, I would like to thank the presenters for the valuable information that was provided. And someone else was saying this was the most amount of questions that was asked for a webinar and congratulating us on that. So I am very excited that many of you posed many different questions, and we were really hoping for this to be a very interactive experience. And so it's been an interactive experience where our presenters were able to receive a lot of different really great questions. So thank you all for participating in today's webinar. You will be receiving a survey so that you might be able to offer us some additional feedback so we can continue to provide you with the best possible webinars that meet your needs as it relates to the P4C project. And I'd like to thank both of our presenters for preparing their materials and for coming on and speaking about routine HIV testing. We appreciate you making the time to present on this presentation and appreciate all the wonderful information and lessons learned that were shared today. And I hope you all enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you once again. If you have any additional questions that maybe you didn't get to ask on this webinar, you're more than welcome to either email me directly at cwhite@myatech.com or p4chivtac@myatech.com. And we will be having some more webinars coming soon. The next webinar will be the next peer-to-peer webinar that will be happening will be on medical case management. We're hoping to release some information about that webinar in a notice. And I believe that is it. Thank you all for participating, and have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you.